You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. We're also at 90.9 FM HD2 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. On the program today, we're going to take a look at changes in the American family. Our guest is journalist and father, Jeremy Adam Smith. In his book, The Daddy Shift, Jeremy Smith explores the ways in which stay-at-home dads and breadwinning moms are, in his words, mapping new territory for families. Smith reports that in 1995, the Census Bureau counted 64,000 stay-at-home dads. In 2007, the count was 159,000. In 2005, Jeremy Smith became one of these dads. His son, Liko, was 1 year old. Smith's wife, Ollie, had stayed at home for the first year of their son's life. Now it was time for her to go to work outside the home. Smith says it was a big adjustment. There was some tough sledding, but before long, he fell in love with his new role as a stay-at-home dad. This afternoon, we'll talk with him about his experience and the experiences of other families who have participated in what he calls a tectonic shift in society and the economy. Listeners, I invite your questions and comments for our guest, Jeremy Smith. Join us with a phone call in the Champaign-Urbana area. 333-9455 is the number to call, 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number, that number 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Jeremy Adam Smith is the senior editor of Greater Good magazine, the co-editor of The Compassion Instinct, and founder of the group blog Daddy Dialectic. His work has appeared in many publications. He lives in San Francisco with his wife and their son. His book, The Daddy Shift, How Stay-at-Home Dads, Breadwinning Moms, and Shared Parenting are Transforming the American Family, is published by the Beacon Press. Again, those phone numbers, 333-9455 and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Jeremy Smith, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Great to be here.
There's been a jump in the number of stay-at-home dads, but it's still a relatively small number of families. Still, you see it as a big shift. Why?
Well, it's important to understand stay-at-home dads as one dimension of a much larger change that's happened with the American family. The Census Bureau, when they go out and count stay-at-home dads, omit the father if he does any paid work at all. And when I was a stay-at-home dad, I worked for a couple of hours a week. Every father I knew who was the primary caregiver to his child, and I ended up knowing quite a few, worked for at least a little bit of the time. So the Census Bureau wouldn't have counted me or any of the dads that I know. And I discovered, as I researched for the book, that to understand the larger pattern of male caregiving, you have to look at Bureau of Labor Statistics data. You have to look at social scientific studies, time use studies that look at what couples do when they're at home. And when you do that, you get a picture of male caregiving that's much broader. For example, when the Bureau of Labor Statistics asked children, young children, you know, who takes care of you while mommy's at work, 25% of them said daddy, which puts the number of male caregivers at around 2 million. So it's actually, it's actually a somewhat trickier problem than it appears at first, partially because what's happening is that the Census Bureau is going out and looking for men who are behaving like mothers traditionally have. And when they do that, they miss a lot of fathers who are the primary caregivers.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. How do we know, do we have any idea how many families do what you and your wife did, that is, shift back and forth?
Right. You know, that is such an interesting question, and we do not know the answer to that. Basically because nobody's really looked at it. And I sort of argue in the book that just based on the research that I did traveling around the country and talking to families, that this is much more common than people think, that families are, that couples are shifting back and forth, taking turns with the caregiving and taking turns with working for pay. And that actually I think for a lot of families, especially right now during the recession, that's actually kind of the new normal. They're not always happy about it. I mean, you know, there's something progressive and good going on here, which is that a lot of men are learning how to take care of their kids and becoming very invested in family life in a way that men weren't before. So that's good. But there's something bad happening, too, which is that, you know, families are coping with a lot of economic instability. You know, when you look at reverse traditional families or you look at working class families who are sharing care, what you see is a lot of resiliency, mm-hmm. and you see a lot of creativity, mm-hmm. and you don't see people worrying about traditional gender roles, about what mom should do and what dad should do. You know, you see people surviving and gaining a lot, but also struggling.
Yeah. Maybe here you would tell us about a stay-at-home dad by the name of Vince Janowski.
That's right. Vince lives in New Jersey, Hopewell, New Jersey, which is a fairly affluent suburb. He went to school, got a good education, went to work in publishing in New York City, and found himself laid off. And he had supported his wife while she went to law school, and she was actually just entering her career as an attorney when he was laid off. So she became an attorney. And, you know, listeners who know how attorneys live know that it's often horrible. You know, they work, especially when you're an associate and you're just starting out, you work 80 hours a week. You know, Vince didn't want to become the primary caregiver of his children. He hadn't planned on it. His wife hadn't planned on it. And being laid off always stinks. You know, and he struggled. His wife struggled as well. But as time went on, they discovered what they were able to gain. His wife gained her career. You know, she was able to become a successful attorney. And he really grew into his role as a stay-at-home dad. He really grew to accept it. Now, again, Vince, like many stay-at-home dads, works a little bit. Both his children are in school now, and he'll work as a freelance editor in the mornings. But he's his children's primary caregiver, and that allows his wife to pursue her career. So they gained a lot from that.
Yeah. How did you and your wife decide she'd stay at home for the first year and then you'd quit your job and stay home with your son once he was a year old?
Right. Well, in contrast to my grandfather and also my father, who I interviewed for the book, my wife and I very much saw our roles as parents as something to be negotiated. You know, we never had an idea that I would work and she would stay home. And at first, actually, when our son was born, you know, like a lot of people who aren't yet parents, you know, we sort of imagined life as it had been with a baby added on. And I'm sure that a lot of parents who are listening to this right now are laughing at me that I thought that. And my wife thought that as well. You know, so we had the baby, and we thought she'd go back to work after a couple of months. But that didn't work out. She decided that she wanted to keep staying home with him because, you know, childbirth is tough. And when, you know, the baby is nursing on you all night, you're waking up a lot, it's hard to get up and go to work. So she took the first year off for that reason. And then, you know, my career reached a crossroads. I was in a position where I could leave my job and do a little bit of consulting. And, you know, it was time for her, she felt, to go back to work. And so that's what we did. It seemed like the logical thing to do at the time, and it was the logical thing to do. And, you know, we struggled a bit, as you mentioned in your introduction to this piece. You know, I think that taking care of my son every day was a lot more overwhelming than I anticipated. And I really understood something about what my wife was going through after I started to do that. And it was hard for my wife to be separated from her baby. We both had these separate parallel struggles going on. And I discovered when I went around the country interviewing parents for the daddy shift that that's a fairly common experience. A lot of couples experience that. But, you know, it's something that they enter to over the long run. And, you know, they often find that over time they gain a lot.
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting when I was reading that section of the book very early on, it's in the introduction, I thought of someone I know who is a mom of now two adopted children. And when the first adopted child came, their son, he was a little bit like your son and you. They had to make this bond.
Yeah.
And so that's interesting, too, isn't it? There's more than one way to become a parent.
Yeah, absolutely. There's many paths to the same destination.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that, like a lot of people, you know, I've written in the book, I write about and I've talked about how, you know, my son had to really struggle to learn to sleep with me, you know, because he was accustomed to falling asleep on the breast. And I think that a lot of parents look at this and, you know, it's just easier for all members of the family to just give the child to mom's breast and let her be the caregiver. And that can set a pattern that lasts a lifetime. But one of the things I discovered in looking at my own experience and in talking to a lot of moms and dads is that the father has a really important role to play, and that is as a bridge between the mother's body and the rest of the world. And, you know, my son learned to sleep with me. He learned to eat with me. He learned how to calm himself with me. He learned how to walk with me, actually. Mm-hmm. My wife liked to carry him a lot, and I said, "You're walking, kid." And that's what I gave to him as a father. And it certainly didn't hurt him. It certainly didn't hurt me at all. I think I gained a lot. And, you know, and I think my wife gained a lot of independence on both a daily level and, you know, also in terms of her life.
Yeah. Well, I think for many of us of a certain generation and going back, I think we would have liked a stronger bond with our fathers.
Mm. That is something I heard so much from stay-at-home dads. You know, a lot of people ask me, you know, the dads that you interviewed, did they emulate their fathers? You know, did they have more involved fathers and thus they wanted to be more involved? And the answer to that is yes, in some cases, but in many cases not. In many cases, they had very remote, distant fathers, and they wanted to compensate for that. They wanted to make up for that in a way. They had rejected the image that their father presented, and they wanted to be a different kind of dad.
How did your parents, who grew up in the 1950s, negotiate the questions of work inside and outside the home?
Well, the big question for them, I discovered when I talked to my father, was whether or not my mother would work. That was as he put it, that was the big question of the day. And they decided that she wouldn't. They decided that she would be a housewife, and she was until I was a teenager. You know, so they never, you know, what he told me was that, you know, he never saw any men taking care of children, ever, in his working class Massachusetts neighborhood community. And it just didn't occur to him that he could do that, as he described it to me.
It's interesting. I think I've told this story before on the air, but my husband, when he was a little boy, he would greet his father coming home from work. And there came a time when he would put a teddy bear in his stroller and he would walk out to meet his dad at the end of the sidewalk. And his dad was a little worried about this until one day the light went on. Because what was going on is that my husband was mimicking what his father had done. That is, put his son, my husband, in the stroller and go for a walk. So it seems to me that there's been a pretty good attitude shift over a couple of generations here now in terms of, you know, the idea of men taking care of children.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I also interviewed my grandfather, and, you know, he was a working class guy. He worked at the quarry for 40 years, and he, you know, was a veteran, had served in World War II, and, you know, I asked him, what challenges did you face as a father? And he said, nothing. Your grandmother did all that. My job was to go to work every day and work so that she would have enough money and my kids would have enough money.
Mm-hmm.
And I always told my wife, you work for me. You know, he would go to work and there would be a boss there and the boss had the money. The boss would pay him. He would take the money home. He was the one with the money when he was at home, doling it out to his wife. Therefore, he was the boss. And, you know, their division of labor, their domestic division of labor was not negotiable. His wife's job was to take care of the kids, and that was ordained by biology and God. And his job was to make the money. And by the standards of his time and his social class, he was an excellent father. You know, he really struggled. He worked, you know, sometimes 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. And his children think he's an excellent father, but they were not close to him, and he was not close to them. And I think it's safe to say that there was a fairly that they had a fairly authoritarian relationship in the household. Mm. You know, but he was a good father by the standards of his time. And today, that's, you know, I don't think that that's the case. I don't think he would be judged that way by anybody. I think that if I had that kind of relationship with my wife, the people around us, many members of my family, you know, my people my age within my family, I think would judge us quite harshly. You know, a man today, our standards have changed. You know, the fatherhood, the definition of a good father has expanded beyond breadwinning to include caregiving. And fathers who refuse to change diapers, who refuse to take their kids to the park, are looked down upon, I think, in many communities. Whereas before, the reverse was true. A father who changed diapers would be teased, you know, and be thought of as being less than a man. And I saw a little glimpse of this once when I was watching The Sopranos. You know, when Tony Soprano is, you know, he's talking with a younger gangster who's a father, and, you know, the younger gangster is, like, struggling with all this diaper stuff, and, you know, he says, oh, you remember how it was when your kids were young, and Tony Soprano says, no, because I didn't do that stuff, except he doesn't say stuff, he says another word. you know, and that was kind of a, you know, Tony Soprano as a throwback, which some people find sexy, of course, but other people find repulsive.
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon is journalist Jeremy Adam Smith. He's the author of The Daddy Shift, How Stay-at-Home Dads, Breadwinning Moms, and Shared Parenting Are Transforming the American Family. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I look forward to your telephone calls, your questions, comments. Maybe you've got a story to share. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number, that number 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Now, when you and your wife were setting out on this adventure, did the two of you have friends who had done this? Were there any role models for you?
The short answer is no. You know, like a lot of people our age living in San Francisco, which actually has a very low proportion of children, you know, we knew one other couple who had a young child, and they actually divorced while my wife was pregnant. And so we went into parenthood not knowing anybody, and also not really looking to our parents as role models, not because we didn't love our parents, not because we rejected them, but just because we didn't want to be the kind of parents that they were. It wasn't a negative thing. It was a positive thing. We had a, you know, we had a positive idea of what kind of parents we wanted to be. And, you know, and I think that that's true for a lot of parents. And I've discovered since then that research has found that many parents find themselves very isolated when the baby comes. They lose a lot of their child-free friends who aren't part of that world. They leave them behind. And or they get left behind, I guess is a different way of framing it. And, you know, they're not only struggling to learn how to be parents and how to relate to each other as parents, but they're also struggling to find a place, a new social world for themselves, which most do. I mean, most ultimately, you know, through play groups and through you know, and ultimately school activities, you know, you do build a new community. That's especially hard for stay-at-home dads, I think. You know, when you're a mom, stay-at-home mom, you definitely have your challenges. I don't want to minimize those. But at the very least, you generally, I think, see a lot of moms around you. And, you know, a lot of moms bond very readily, like soldiers in the trenches, around the conditions of daily life with babies. And a lot of dads, you know, and most dads I know did not whine about this, but it was a fact that they were comparatively isolated. That they would go to play groups, that they would go to music classes or swim classes, and they were, you know, usually the only guy there. And, you know, and they would feel a little bit like outsiders. And even when there were other guys there, sometimes they didn't know how to relate to the other guys as caregivers. You know, that's a new kind of social relationship that men have. You know, when men get together in our society in general, you know, the first thing that comes out of their mouth oftentimes is, what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's kind of an important bridge. It's a way of talking. And, you know, it's to bond over fatherhood is common, But I think that it's not, for a lot of guys, you know, that's not the point of entry to friendship with other guys. I think it's safe to say.
Hmm.
That's changing, but it's, you know, it's still the case.
Yeah. Also, in your case, I want to go back to your dad and your grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
What do they think about the choices that you and your wife have made?
Well, I think that for my grandfather, who passed away this past January, mm-hmm. You know, I don't think it computed, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just didn't. You know, we didn't really talk about it, and, you know, I don't, and if we had, I think he would have just thought it was very strange. You know, for my father, and for his generation within my family, you know, the baby boomers within my family, I think that it was definitely noteworthy and strange. And, you know, I tell the story in my book of a female relative of ours who sent an email out to basically the entire family saying that I was doing the wrong thing, that we were doing the wrong thing. You know, but what in response to that, my father replied to that, and he said that, you know, if Jeremy and Ollie agree that this is the right thing to do, then it's the right thing to do. And we may not understand it, and, you know, it may seem strange to us, but they really love Lico, and that's a really good start, and not a lot else matters. And, you know, when my father wrote that, you know, I have to say, you know, I felt really close to him.
Mm.
I felt really, really close to him. I felt very moved, and, you know, that's why I dedicated the book to him, Amen, to my son.
Yeah. Writing about your dad, at one point in the book, you say that, you know, when he was a father, and you got to remember, too, he was a young man at the time, he was living on what you call the bridge.
Yeah, that's right. It's something that, you know, the more I learned about fathers of the past, the more compassion I felt. You know, because I think for baby boomer fathers, they were really... you know, as I write, living on a bridge between the father as pure breadwinner and the father as breadwinner and caregiver. And my father couldn't fully embody either stage. You know, I think that his was very much a transitional generation where they felt as though they ought to be doing more in home, that they ought to be involved fathers, that they ought to help with housework, that they ought to share in child care. But that was often very hard for them to implement. And sometimes this was just because of the weight of tradition and psychology and male privilege. And sometimes it was a result of economic conditions. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. It's very much still the case that business adheres to what's called the ideal worker model. So, you know, your worker is a robot who comes to work and is unencumbered by family responsibilities and emotion. And that's just not the expectations for fathers today. And that was starting to emerge, I think, in my father's day. You know, fathers, you know, I mean, if the father isn't, you know, coming to doctor's appointments, if the father is missing recitals, if the father is, you know, not involved with childcare and picking up the slack, especially if the mother's working, that can create tremendous conflict in the marriage. And it created tremendous conflict in my parents' marriage. And I see it happening in the marriages around me today with people my age and younger. You know, so one of the implications, I think, of what I call the daddy shift, you know, this expansion of fatherhood to include caregiving, is that we really need public and workplace policy mm-hmm. that recognizes their roles as caregivers. I mean, women and mothers for a long time have fought to have employers recognize that they have family responsibilities. And men need to go through that struggle as well. And a lot of men are, but they're doing it in a very sort of lonely, isolated way. I interviewed some human resources managers, and I looked at a lot of the data. And in fact, a lot more men are asking for things like parental leave and flex time and paid sick days so that they can take care of kids. And, you know, for elite workers, you know, for the most privileged sector of our society, they're actually getting that. You know, if you want to understand inequality in the United States, you can see who has good family benefits and who does not. A lot of working class, poor people, you know, they have no paid sick time. They have no flex time. There's no such thing as that. There's no parental leave. So they're either in the workforce or they're out, and that can have devastating consequences for their families.
Yeah. Yeah. Do we know how many men take unpaid family leave at the birth or with the adoption of a child?
Gosh, you know, we actually don't have good overall numbers for that, and we don't have a good overall idea about why they don't take it when it's available. You know, what we have are a lot of, you know, we can look at a lot of individual businesses, which is what I did. You know, you can look at large corporations and you can look at large employers and see how many people take advantage of parental leave when it's available. And in general, men are taking advantage of it at much lower rates than do mothers. And, you know, for obvious reasons, I think. You know, mothers, you know, they go through childbirth, they're breastfeeding, they're going to take the leave. They have to. But for a lot of fathers, you know, the Family Medical Leave Act guarantees you time off, but it's not paid. Only California offers paid leave to parents. And most businesses are not offering the leave at full pay. And when fathers, it's still the case that when fathers become parents, you know, they feel a tremendous, the best fathers, right, feel a tremendous sense of responsibility to earn money for their families, especially if their wife is scaling back on work or dropping out of work altogether. And, you know, and it's still the case, we know, because researchers have gone out and surveyed managers about this, that a lot of managers don't think that fathers should take advantage of the leave or flex time when it's available and are willing to penalize them when they do. And it's also the case, by the way, that fathers look at what happens to mothers who take advantage of parental leave and flex time, and they look at what happens to their careers. You know, I consider it to be beyond dispute that mothers face a lot of discrimination on the job for meeting their responsibilities as mothers. And, you know, a lot of dads look at that and they think, that can't happen to me. You know, it cannot happen to me. I have to support my family. So there's a lot of, you know, factors that come into play when a father is debating whether or not to take advantage of leave. And right now, I think it's safe to say that for most American businesses, the culture, the workplace culture, the larger culture, and a lot of policy just doesn't support that caregiving role.
Hmm. Outside of perhaps thinking about paid leave at the time of birth or with the adoption of a child, are there other issues that you see as being important to the health and well-being of families?
Well, yes. you know, I think that, you know, like, for example, health care is something that Americans are talking a lot about right now because of President Obama's proposal. And, you know, I just do not understand why Americans accept the healthcare system that they do. It's such a patchwork, and it's so inefficient, and it's so expensive and so much trouble, and so many people are not covered, that it's a wonder that, you know, Americans haven't risen up in revolt and just thrown out the whole system. And you know, and in fact, you know, a survey was just released today of Californians. It showed that three-fourths of Californians think that the entire healthcare system should be just scrapped and rebuilt. You know, people are not happy with the healthcare system that we have, and that really, you know, the first people who are impacted by that are kids. You know, so this is a major issue for parents, I think, is getting the healthcare that they need. You know, and I can tell you from interviews, you know, when a dad gets a layoff, the first thing, or a mom, the first thing he or she thinks is, you know, what am I going to do about health care? You know, it creates so much stress, that constant worry. You know, the thought of not being able to get your child the health care that they need is a torment to many parents.
Yeah.
So that's one issue.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just thinking of you said that, you know, the health care system is such a patchwork. Also, the larger social safety net is such a patchwork.
And yeah, absolutely.
And right now it's really stretched.
Yeah. Oh, it's beyond stretch. You know, I was also just reading that the state of California might actually run out of money for unemployment, to pay out unemployment.
And given the state's situation, and Illinois also is in very dire straits, not quite as bad as California yet. But, you know, one wonders if paid leave in California could be in jeopardy.
Yeah. You know, we're at a very strange moment because, you know, I think that the president, you know, I looked at his family policy during the election and I thought, well, this is great. I'll vote for this. And I looked at the Republican policy as well and I thought, oh, my God, I hope to God he doesn't win. And, you know, and I think that there's actually a very high level. I mean, you know, there's wonderful ideas out there. And, you know, I think that the Democratic Party platform on these questions is not bad. Could be a lot better, but it's not bad. You know, but the problem is that we are in the middle of a huge economic catastrophe. And in any economic catastrophe in America, the pain starts at the bottom, and then it works its way up very, very slowly. And, you know, I think that at least half of it, half of the answer is for those people at the bottom to get together and get organized and fight back as much as possible.
Hmm. That's a tall order, though, for people who are really struggling to put food on the table, take care of their children, get them to school, get themselves to work if they have jobs, deal with looking for a job.
Absolutely.
Shift working.
Yeah.
There's so many challenges.
There sure are. I mean, you know, I think that it is, you know, like I was very politically active before I became a parent, you know, in my community and, you know, in all kinds of ways. And after I became a parent, that stopped. I would say it stopped actually for about 2 or 3
mm-hmm.
years. Not because I wanted to, you know, I missed it, but, you know, my baby's needs were so consuming. And, you know, and that's a dimension of the daddy shift as well, that, you know, it's the case that, you know, once upon a time in America, you know, and any time somebody starts a sentence with once upon a time, you know that a little bit of BS is about to come. But I think this is true, empirically true, that, you know, a lot of men, you know, they would work, and then in the evening they would go to social clubs. They would be involved in a lot of community activities. They were expected to. You know, they weren't home with their kids. You know, we're not talking about all fathers here, but we're talking about a lot of fathers. They were very involved with civic life. And I think one of the consequences of the daddy shift is that fathers feel a lot more pressure to be home at night. They're either at work or they're at home. And that hurts civic life.
Yeah. I've got a caller who wants to join us this afternoon. Before I do that, though, I do want to ask you this question. Given that I'm wondering if there's common ground here when it comes to children for people across the political spectrum to agree on some things.
Well, you know, gosh, I think that there definitely is. You know, I think that sometimes framing is very important. you know, there's a lot of parents, I think, who desperately need a social safety net, but they have a lot of trouble getting their heads around the idea that this might be paid through by taxes. That can conflict a lot with their political ideology. But I think there's only so long we can live the way we do. You know, there are such incredible strains. People need relief. And, you know, I think the way to do it is to address those needs.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Jeremy Adam Smith, author of The Daddy Shift, How Stay-at-Home Dads, Breadwinning Moms, and Shared Parenting Are Transforming the American Family, is our guest this afternoon. My name is Celeste Quinn. If you'd like to join us with a question, comment, 333-9455 or toll-free 800-222-9455. Let's take a call now from a listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Yeah, hi. I have a few comments. First of all, to your guest, wasn't it such a blessing that this happened to you?
To stay at home with my son, yes, it was.
I mean, I figure that I've been very blessed in terms of my two children. But anyway, I think one of the issues is I have a very good friend. Her son is highly educated, and he decided that he wanted to go and maybe start a little business or something or other, and his wife, you know, very career-oriented. And what happened, he became, you know, basically, you know, mommy dad. But she, I think, is unhappy because he's highly educated, engineering, very, very bright, went to some of the best schools. And I think maybe that, you know, but he loves it, you know, that kind of thing. So I think there's an issue with parents. I think another interesting areas in terms of divorced parents. I'm divorced, But I think that what happens in among fathers that are really, you know, in other words, value their children, that caregiving dimension really comes out, you know.
Yeah.
Makes you a much better person, you know. So in terms of comment. The other one is that I think finally, and when you look at the U.S., we're not very, we really don't value children in terms of the services when we're compared to, you know, England or Europe and all. You know, they got the, a lot of time. I don't know how much time they can take off. And, you know, they got, you know, places for them to stay, all kinds of things where we don't do that. So anyway, any of these that you'd like to comment on, but it's a great show.
Thanks for the call.
You know, it's an interesting question about divorce. Male caregiving is still, I think, quite new. But I believe that, I believe it's the case that when you do have a situation where the father is able to stay home with the child, at least for a time, they do develop a very tight bond. And when you have high expectations of father involvement, you know, they're going to develop a much tighter bond with the child than existed for previous generations. And so when divorce comes, if it comes, you know, oftentimes, you know, I found this for my book, actually, that the father will not, you know, disappear. You know, one of the first couple that I interviewed, Ed and Rochelle, who are profiled in Chapter 2, got divorced shortly before I was turning in the manuscript for the book. And I debated whether or not to revise the book, and I actually decided not to. You know, because I talk about in that chapter some of the troubles that they faced. You know, I mean, Rochelle was very ambivalent about being the breadwinner, and she felt a little bit jealous of her husband. And, you know, and she struggled with that role. And, you know, I think that one of the questions on my mind as I wrote the book was, well, how can you help women like this who feel that ambivalence? And one of the things I realized as I went on and as I interviewed a lot of parents is that, you know, a key to that is, first of all, you know, before you get married, before you have children, you know, talk about these things. Talk about what it is you want. You know, if you want to focus on your career, say that, whether you're male or female. If you want to stay home and take care of the kids, say that. And, of course, when you become parents, sometimes the situation can change. And so then it becomes very important to you know, have a lot of empathy for your partner and really listen to them. You know, put your anxiety aside, put your expectations aside, and really listen to what your life partner has to say, how they're feeling, and try to help them. You know, don't focus on yourself. Focus on them and how you can help them. And, you know, and the couples that were able to do that and were able to articulate, you know, so I was interviewing reverse traditional couples, you know, if they were able to articulate what it is they were gaining from this arrangement, not just to me but to each other, then they were often, you know, very happy. You know, and Ed and Rochelle, so Ed and Rochelle divorced, and Ed is still a very involved father. They're divorced, but he's a very involved father, and he has a very cooperative relationship with his ex-wife. And I have a feeling that is something we're going to gain through a lot more male caregiving.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that having this kind of marriage and having this kind of relationship when it comes to rearing children is that there's a lot of discussion that has to go on, and it has to happen, it seems to me, regularly.
Yeah.
There's a lot of negotiation that has to happen, and it could be one's ideas about parenting, you know, and it could be questions about, there's a father in the book who is thinking, gee, am I good enough to do this?
Yeah.
I think my wife's better at this than I am, but I love it. But,
yeah.
You know, so there's a lot going on.
Yeah. A lot of men, yeah, absolutely. You know, this came to me as a kind of revelation when I was about halfway through the book. You know, for my grandfather's generation, as I said, you know, gender roles were imposed. You know, there was no negotiation. There was very little choice for them. And that is not where we're at today. And I think that once people understand that, that the rules are really up in the air, there are no rules for a lot of parents. Once you understand that and you get over it, then you can understand that you really need to talk to your partner, you know, and really put these things out on the table. Because, you know, it's not the case for most women that they're just going to be happy being in the kitchen for the rest of their lives. I think that, you know, my opinion is that a good life always has a certain degree of caregiving. But that's not all there is. I mean, people also deserve a chance to work and to try to, you know, have a sense of accomplishment and efficacy in their lives. And, you know, so we, you know, I think that the reality on the ground is that most families are trying to accommodate that and that there's a tremendous amount of negotiation going on. But sometimes people are, you know, they're not, they feel like it shouldn't be that way. And I guess part of my message here is that it is that way. And you have to understand it that way, to understand that that's part of the nature of modern family life, that there's a lot of listening and negotiation that has to happen, and that we're gaining a lot from that.
In your house, who does what?
Sorry, I have a cold, so, you know, apologize for coughing once in a while. But who does what in my house? I am the main house cleaner. My wife, you know, just doesn't see dirt, and I do, and I clean a lot, which most people are like, oh, that can't possibly be true. You know, you're a man, and, you know, no, it is true, and I recognize that that's atypical for a lot of guys. A lot of stay-at-home dads I talk to were just not that into cleaning the house. They would do a lot of remodeling. You know, they would do a lot of work around the house. But, you know, it was true that a lot of these guys were not the most fastidious cleaners. They were not 1950s housewives. My wife does a lot of the cooking. You know, I personally just don't have that much joy in it. And, you know, I'll do it. And when I was a stay-at-home dad, I cooked every single night because she wouldn't get home until 7 o'clock in the evening. And so I would try to have dinner on the table. you know, and I definitely considered that a sacrifice. And my wife likes to fix things. I guess this is another non-traditional thing. She was a bike mechanic for 5 years, and she just hates to see things broken, so she's the one who fixes things in our house. In terms of childcare, you know, I think that probably over time my wife has done most of it. You know, like I said, she didn't work at all for the first year of his life. And we've really, you know, for us personally, I know not everybody sees it this way, and I'm fine with that. I think one of the mistakes that a lot of parenting writers make is that they imagine that their experience and what they want is what everybody should want or what everybody's experience is. I know that not everybody has this experience, but for us, you know, we really have seen time with our child as something that we prize, you know, and it's a gift that we give to each other. We've tried to take turns as much as possible taking care of our son, and sometimes we'll even compete a little bit to do that. But, you know, she's probably done most of it, but, you know, I've done as much as humanly possible because I enjoy it.
Yeah. We haven't talked very much about some of the people that you interviewed in depth for this book, but maybe to close, you would tell us about one individual or a couple who you were really impressed with, and they really opened your eyes to this paradigm shift, if I could use that word, that term.
Well, every couple, I mean, every person I talked to, if I thought enough about their story, opened my eyes to something. The last couple that I profile is a couple that I called Misun and Kent Hoffman. They lived in Chicago, and their child was born profoundly disabled. And Misun had a very high-powered career, working for a consulting firm specializing in the intersection between litigation and finance. She was both a lawyer, and she also had a PhD in finance. And Kent, you know, had actually been a harp repair man. He worked in a harp factory. And, you know, when their child was born, you know, profoundly disabled, he was actually born with a small jaw, which sounds like a small thing, I guess, but it catalyzed a dozen system failures in the newborn's body. For example, his trachea was pinched, and the newborn was not able to get enough air he wasn't able to get enough air. And, you know, it just created this range of problems. And for the first 6 months of his child's life, Kent sat in his son's nursery, completely surrounded by all this machinery that was intended to keep his son alive. And he could not leave. You know, he would leave to go to the bathroom, but he had to monitor this stuff and monitor his son. And keep him alive. It was a daily fight. And then at night, a nurse would come and help out with it. One of many programs, by the way, that are threatened by budget cuts in the state of California. So Kent, you know, and this went on for years, where Kent, you know, was had to constantly pay attention to his son's needs. And when I interviewed them, you know, this couple, you know, I mean, Kent didn't see himself as being a hero. He didn't see himself as being a martyr. You know, he did what he had to do. That's what he told me. And as I was talking to them, I realized how completely heroic his sacrifice is. You know, we think of the hero as being a male person, and we think of the hero as being somebody who goes off to war or rescues a kitten from a burning building or something like that. And it really struck me that this was that Kent was a kind of hero that we just don't see a lot in our culture. But it's a kind of hero that many women have been. You know, we're not accustomed to seeing men show that kind of heroism. And we're not accustomed to seeing women show that kind of heroism because, you know, thanks to, you know, thousands of years of, you know, denigrating women's needs and accomplishments and contributions, you know, we haven't been able to see that, how heroic that caregiving is. And, you know, that really changed my perspective on men and women and the nature of caregiving.
Yeah. I've got to wrap it up here because we're out of time. But one thing we haven't talked about this afternoon, but I think I would like to mention it. One of the surprises for me was that the daddy shift is taking place across all kinds of groups in this country, demographic groups. That was interesting. And one of the chapters in the book, you deal with some myths about stay-at-home dads and breadwinning moms. And one of them is this kind of thing is the luxury of educated elites. And that was an eye-opener.
Yeah.
Well, we've got to wrap it up here. Jeremy Smith, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jeremy Smith is the author of The Daddy Shift, How Stay-at-Home Dads, Breadwinning Moms, and Shared Parenting Are Transforming the American Family. The publisher is The Beacon Press.